You are listening to the ForceCon Frontline, bringing you to our soldiers on the front lines of readiness.
All right, good morning from the Warfighter Symposium, AUSA's annual event here just outside of Fort Liberty, North Carolina. This is the home of the Airborne and Special Operations. Today, we're talking with some of the soldiers here from Fort Liberty about the impact 75 years after Executive Order 9980 and 9981, which, of course, ended segregation of the military and the federal workforce. So joining us today is the 16th Sergeant Major of the Army, SMA Michael Grinston. So thank you very much. Yesterday, SMA, you had the opportunity to speak at the Pentagon at the department's commemoration for this same event. What were kind of some of those key things that you wanted people to take away from your remarks?
Thanks. Thanks for hosting this too, by the way. And thanks for the panel members for being here with me today. And I'd like just to say I'm probably the only one that was born when the executive order was signed. Okay, that was kind of funny. So probably somebody's like, man, you're 75 years old. Actually, I'm not. Okay. So, yeah, it's been a long time since we signed that. But, you know, what we talked about yesterday was the importance of the effects of that, you know, 75 years later. Like any policy, you sign it, immediately you think everything's going to be right with the world. And that's not true. So it just takes time year after year for us getting better. And that's kind of what I talked about was here's what happened a long time ago. I talked to about a guy named James Queen and all his personalities. You know, he was a ranger, paratrooper. He did a lot of great things. He later became a school teacher. And oh, by the way, he just happened to be black. So in other words, a lot of us, you know, we want to be judged by our actions, you know, what we did in life. Not by the color of our skin. And desegregation, you know, 75 years ago gave us that opportunity to do all that. And then I told a little bit about my story, you know, as the Sergeant Major of the Army. And some of the things that I've been criticized for that we're not yet there yet. And believe it or not, criticized for my race, you know, as recently as, 30 days ago. And it wasn't specifically, my race, it was that I'd actually just had to talk. I talked about it and says I wasn't focusing on the right things, which was interesting is that they took a video that I'd made from 3 years ago and then, you know, paused it. And when I said, you know, here's my race, I said that and they paused my video and he says, okay. And the comment was, so what? Like, who cares? I was like, well, that's interesting. And then they played a little bit more about what I said and then paused it again. And then, you know, I said I'd struggled with racial identity, you know, my entire career. My mom was white, my dad's black. And the next comment after that was that, well, that's your problem. I said, well, so these things still happen, you know. And I said, well, what about all your war fighting? I said, well, there's stories. There's more articles on me from war fighting than there are about that 1 minute, but they just choose to pick what they want. And all those things about me are important, not just one piece. And that's kind of what I said yesterday. But the whole lineup was fantastic. You had General Brown out there, and the DepSecTef, Honorable Assistant Arrows, lots of speakers, a really fantastic event. And the OSD put on a really good event. So, there's a lot of stuff to talk about, and I really appreciate it. So I'll kind of stop there and say I'm really looking forward to the discussion today.
Yeah, I think this, of all the places in the Army we could go, what better place than Fort Liberty, home of the 82nd Airborne Division, which before that executive order was even signed, had desegregated units when the 555th Parachute Infantry, the famed Triple Nickels, were brought into the 3rd Battalion, 505th Parachute Infantry Regiment in 1947. So it's really great to be here. We've got some great soldiers on the panel with you, so we'll start at the end and just have each of you briefly introduce yourself, and we'll get the conversation started.
Yes, sir. I'm PV2 Joshua Shipman. I'm a cavalry scout with 373 Cav, and I was born and raised in Mountain View, Arkansas.
Hello, my name is Sergeant Heidi Calona Tejera. I'm a 68 Alpha Biomedical Equipment Specialist. I'm with 51st Medical Logistics Company, and I was originally born here in Fort Liberty.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Staff Sergeant Shane Pattis-Helmstedt. I'm from 3rd Expeditionary Sustainment Command, 3SC for short, and I was born and raised in Midlothian, Virginia.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Janina Simmons. I'm currently the first sergeant for the best brigade in the Army, 108th HHB. I'm super excited to be here and share some insights for everyone. I am a 14 Tango, that's a Air Defense Patriot.
Good morning. I'm Specialist Ayala. I'm a 19 Delta, which is a Cav Scout at 573. I'm born and raised in Corpus Christi, Texas.
All right, first sergeant for the first brigade and the best brigade in the Army. We're going to start with you,
okay.
Leaders Lead. So in full disclosure, First Sergeant Simmons has been a mentee of the SMA for quite some time now. So I think you probably have some really good perspective. Y'all have probably had similar conversations in the past, but I'd love for you to just kind of talk about what it means for you when you kind of think about the history of the Army, the last 75 years, and talk about, you know, what it means to realize that the leadership opportunities you've had actually haven't been available to people who look like you, and just what that's meant.
Right. So, you know, if you take a step back, it's humbling to think that 75 years ago, I wouldn't even be here, a first sergeant. So I'm triple threat, Black, woman, gay. So automatically when I walk in a room, I should feel inferior based on where we're at today. But you know, the history aspect, it's just so humbling and blessed, and I take it personal. And when I say that, I mean, let's talk about Ranger, because that's like the heavy hitter. Before I went to school, terrified, didn't want to do it, but that doesn't negate the fact that somebody had to open that door. I'm pretty sure 75 years ago, nobody was thinking about female Rangers. It's impossible. They can't carry the weight. They can't go the distance. They're mentally not that tough. Somebody, and I don't know who it is, and I'm just thankful somebody opened that door, or maybe it was multiple people. So with that door being open, I take pride in that. I have to not only open the door, walk through the door, I have to pave the way for somebody else. And that's why, you know, we don't go to Ranger school to wear a cloth and walk around all cool. It's way more than that. And at the time, I had no idea that I was the first African-American woman to graduate, because there was so few of us who went through in 2019. I think I was like number 30. So I say all of that to say is now we are coming to a place where within the Army, we can make it about age, gender, race, you know, we can make about all of that. But I want to impression on it's about your work ethic. It is about personal courage to just toe the line. Do you have what it takes to just show up and do something that nobody thought I could do it? So toe the line and put in the work. When everybody said, you know what? Yeah, you want to do Ranger. It sounds cool, but you're not going to do it. You're way too skinny. This is what verbatim. You don't lift legs. You're not strong enough. The rucksack is going to weigh 80 pounds. You can't do that. I was like, you know what? I'll do y'all one better. And my goal, through my work ethic, I trained myself. I didn't have a personal trainer. I had Google. I Googled everything. I can't make it up, Sergeant Major. I Googled.
I don't know how we did it before Google.
I don't know how you did either, because I Google everything. I Googled the RPFT. Anything. I just used Google. I worked out, and I just wanted to achieve that, because now I can tell my soldiers how to do it. Not necessarily Ranger. But they look at me, because leaders lead, you lead from the front. You have to establish yourself as a leader. And then those soldiers be like, well, hey, First Sergeant, how did you do that? How did you do that? Now I just opened that door to help them. Prior to this, I engaged in a just awesome conversation with Specialist Ayala. As females, we're not privileged to have a lot of female leaders, because we're now just shattering these ceilings up there. There's probably some, but there's no female Sergeant Major Ranger. Does it have to be a female Sergeant Major Ranger to be my mentor? No.
I hope not.
But those are type of people that we would like to start looking up to, the scouts and everything. They're not there yet, so it needs to be us. So I need to be that, whatever that is for somebody. She's going to be that Sergeant Major, because she's going to stay enlisted, right? For somebody else. So we are doing what they did 75 years ago. And then when I'm long retired and I got my little crutch and I can't run anymore, that's going to be her. And then it's going to be somebody else. So we are still continuing to just pay. We haven't had a female SMA yet. It's coming. I don't know when. I don't know who it's going to be. Female CSA. We haven't had those yet. So it's 2023 and we continue to just strive for excellence. And I do think the Army, and back to what the SMA said, we see these little changes and people think, you know, climate change or everything, it comes overnight. It doesn't. Because what we're doing right now might be just great in 2065. Who knows? But it's the little micro movement that will create a bigger movement for the future. And every soldier, like, they have so much power. Because it's not about female, male. Male, female, we all have so much power just through our personal stories. Because me, mom is white, dad is black. I mean, we could go on and on about, you know, childhood and upbringing, et cetera, et cetera. We all have that. And that's what makes us unique and able to maneuver within the force. But that's kind of my two cents. I take pride. A lot of people ask me where my motivation comes from. I'm not motivated. I'm disciplined. And that does come from history. And I feel privileged to just sit here and share my story because somebody paved the way for me.
I will. I'll kind of jump in. Just one very quick thing is for everybody. You have to mentor people that don't look like you is what I would recommend everybody. Is sometimes you're not going to find that person that fits exactly you. And I'll give you one example. There's only one Sergeant Major in the Army at one time. So it doesn't matter who it is. It might not look exactly what you're looking for. But I think as a leader, my recommendation is pick somebody that might not actually look or be exactly your gender, your race, and build that expertise. And it's not about the race, the gender. It's about, is that a leader that can help you? And that's why I reached out to her. It's like, she's enlisted. She's a ranger. She's not infantry. So I think along the way, she's going to need some help. Along the way, I was going to need some help because I was a 13 Bravo ranger, ranger qualified. So don't get caught up on that. It doesn't fit that mold. And I think a lot of times that's where we get in trouble. It's like, it's got to be this mold. It doesn't have to be a mold. Is this a person that can help you? Don't just say it has to look like you, because guess what? You know, it might not look like you. It's okay. But we got to break through that sometimes.
Specialist Isla, you, First Sergeant Simmons says that you guys got a few minutes to talk before here. So I'll ask you, what kind of qualities would you look for in a mentor or a leader?
My qualities that I like to see in a leader are discipline, accountability is my big one. Holding soldiers accountable, holding your peers accountable, that's huge. Because if you can account for them and they can account for themselves, you can trust them downrange. So that's big.
All right, we'll go kind of to the end.
At the end of the table, our PV2, sorry, I'm missing your name for the moment, but same question to you. What kind of qualities are you looking for?
So what I'm looking for, whenever I first got here, it was kind of, I mean, it's my first unit, so I was new, obviously, didn't really know like what was going to happen just coming out of OSIT. So really someone who would just be there to help me, like walk me through everything. And instead of just like telling me what to do, just actually go out there with me and like lead by example. Probably that'd be my number one. Sorry.
So it kind of sounds like,
Regardless of both of your backgrounds and your experiences, very similar qualities that you look for. And I think SMA, that's something that's really important as we kind of think about leadership or mentorship in general. So I guess I would ask you kind of what are some of those things that you've learned along the way that, you know, if you want to be a good leader or, you know, have a good mentor relationship, you know, what are those responsibilities of that leader kind of going down?
Yeah, I think it takes two ways. Sometimes you might not find that right there, you know, right there from your end. I'd like to say it's right there. Your squad leader is going to be that perfect role model for you. Sometimes I say it depends. You might have to reach out. So you might have to look, and you'll find it in strange ways. So from a soldier perspective, does the person above me have the qualities that I'm looking for in myself? And if the answer is no, then maybe you got to go somewhere else. You'll find it. we have everything in the Army. And then from the leadership, I got to go, like I already said, you know, don't go with something that looks like, tastes like, smells like you. And that's what we like sometimes, you know. Oh, it's got to be a 13 Bravo and only a 13 Bravo. But you'll find leadership in the strangest of places. But sometimes there's a little, I do say there's a little bit of a trust too. So you've got to trust that the folks around you are giving you the right information. I think what would be hard is as a new soldier, you don't know. You know, you're like, I think they're telling me right. I don't know. So, but eventually I think you figure it out. I'd like to say it's all going to be perfect, but it's not. There's going to be, you know, some that are good and then some that are great. And it's going to be hard to tell the great ones. You'll see it. You'll think that's it. But when you see it for the first time, I think you need to seek out those in greatness. They're usually really busy though. So, and sometimes if they're extremely disciplined, that comes with consequences too, because I was extremely disciplined. So, that's probably the best advice and recommendations.
Staff Sergeant Pat, I'd like to kind of ask you, you know, recently the Army changed our slogan to be all you can be. So as you kind of think about that as a soldier, as a staff sergeant, as a leader, you know, what does that mean to you? How do you internalize that and kind of, you know, I'm not asking you like, how did that change your actions, but just, you know, what has been kind of your thoughts on that slogan and maybe how it drives what you do every day?
Sure. So with the new motto, be all you can be, what I envision is for your actual self, your individual self, to always self-motivate yourself, to always do better, to always maintain what the standard is, and even go beyond it. Always strive for excellence.
I will go ahead and just, for the group here, here in a minute, we'll start to open up for questions. So start to kind of think about, you know, whatever you'd like to say. And if you have something, kind of cue me and we'll bring you up. Just to kind of continue down this path, understanding, you know, the responsibility that we have as leaders. SMA, what is something that you would kind of tell that young staff sergeant, maybe a brand new staff sergeant, that you would, like, the one thing you really want them to focus on with their squad?
There's not one. There's a long list of things I would tell a young staff sergeant to focus on his squad. You know, probably it just starts with, and you've heard me say this a few times, but for everyone else, is you have to be an absolute expert in your field. As a staff sergeant, nobody should know your job better than you do. No one. Not the platoon sergeant, not the soldiers, not the sergeant. Nobody. And I would say as a staff sergeant, I thought as a 13 Bravo, I was the absolute expert in everything there was about being a 13 Bravo. I would have challenged anybody in the Army on my job. And I did on multiple times. Sometimes it caused me to do some push-ups, and I was perfectly fine with that. And I'll give you the example. I was a staff sergeant. We were doing an emplacement. And, you know, if you know anything about guns, you got to come in. It's very detail-oriented. You only get 6 minutes to emplace the Alger at the time, or you fail the standard. And then there were standards for everything. So they put out the collimator, which is an aiming reference. So you got a gun tube this way. You got something on the ground that kind of tells you which way to shoot. And they put it out, and I said, we're going to do it again. Start over. We're going to march over to do it again. And the platoon sergeant said, why'd you do that? Because he put it out wrong. And he goes, well, what was wrong about it? I said, well, collimator has to be between 24 and 2800 mils, says the TM. And he, whoa, where did you say that? And I was like, it's right in the TM. You know, you could read it if you like. Oh, that's for everybody here. Leave off that last part. All after was a bunch of push-ups. So, oh, you know, my attitude. But, you know, I was right, by the way. So that's what I mean. I mean, I knew the doctrine inside and out. I knew my job, and that would have challenged anybody. It's like, you don't know my job better than me. I mean, you come down and yell at me, but no one was harder on emplacing that howitzer than I was. I was going to meet the standards every time. So number one, as a leader, no matter what your job is, just be the absolute expert. A lot of times now I hear, well, the private coming out of OSET knows a lot. Yeah, a lot. I mean, a little. I mean, like, you know, how would a, there's no way a private in this planet would know as much as me about my job coming out of basic training. That didn't even register in my mind. So number one, being an absolute expert. Number two is, it comes to that discipline is be, and I was ruthless on discipline and standards in the organization. Physical fitness and discipline were like, that just kind of started. And I enforced that not only on myself, but on my soldiers. So, but let me say, it started with me. I'd be the first one there. If I asked my soldiers to do something, I'd already done it, or I'd probably do it with them. It wouldn't matter. We were sweeping the motor pool. If I had time, I would sweep the motor pool with them. But being an absolute expert in your field, being extremely disciplined, starts with yourself. I never wanted to be a hypocrite, and then enforcing that on my soldiers. And then last, what I would say to a young staff sergeant is take care of your people. And that none of that means I was really nice. I wasn't very friendly sometimes. Trust me, I would look out for them. I was ruthless on all that discipline. I just told you that. But equally as hard on taking care of my soldiers. So I'll give you another bad example of a bad leadership. I was actually a sergeant, but in a staff sergeant position. And I had my soldiers, you know, when you do a formation, it's like all my soldiers are on my left. And then, yeah, first gun crew, second, third, and I was fourth. And the third section chief turned around and said something to my soldiers, said, "Hey, I want to see your shaven profile." He said that to one of my soldiers. I said, "No, you don't." He's like, "Yeah, I do." I was like, "I'm a staff sergeant." I said, "I don't care who you are." So things not, again, probably leave out that last part. But I told him, I said, "You probably need to turn around." he's like, "I'm a staff sergeant." You know, so he's like, "Okay." That soldier's not going to do anything you just told him to do. Because see, he's in my gun crew. In other words, he didn't trust that I'd already checked and that I was taking care of my soldiers. He thought he could. It did not work out. So a few words were said. Thune sergeant was called. They were like, "Yeah, Kristen's crazy. He's Ranger qualified. Leave him alone." And then we went back their way. So, and he never saw that profile, by the way. So to this day. And if he's listening, I apologize. I was a little hateful. But that's the three things I would give you advice is that as tough as I was on my soldiers, they knew that no matter what, I would succumb. But I, like I said, this was the same guy that was ruthless on what they would do. But I think that's probably what saved me most of the time is they really knew I cared. So those three things, expert at your job, maintain discipline with yourself and your soldiers, and then take care of them.
Sergeant Cardona, just sitting up here on this panel and listening to that, kind of what is your, kind of what's going through your head? What's your reaction to just hearing kind of those kind of words of wisdom? Like, how do you kind of take that, internalize it, and then put that into work?
Well, since I just recently picked up Sergeant, but those are some of the qualities that I want to embody once I do start having my own squad and being a team leader and being able to take care of my soldiers and get to know them on a personal level to understand what it is they need on their professional level as well as their personal level. And so those really resonated with me in wanting to improve myself as a team.
As we talk about building these cohesive teams, how does something like the word inclusion or diversity kind of impact our ability to do that and kind of help us like really set the foundation, for what that means? First Sergeant Simmons, I'll start with you and SMA. I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, so I think that starts with you have to get to know your soldiers. And I'm talking beyond the, "Hey, how are you doing?" And you just keep it moving. It could, tracking counseling sessions, et cetera, but just the daily engagement, because, you'll have inclusion, you'll have black, white, this, that. So get to know your soldiers. Where do they come from? Puerto Rico, Africa, Germany, what have you. And once you get to know them, one, you'll know what makes them tick. You know how they operate or why they do or do not operate in such a way. And then it's like the great thing about the Army is that it's just an awesome melting pot. And that's what makes us so unique. We're not all from privilege. We're not all from, we all don't come from nothing. Everybody is different. And as a leader, it is your job to have everybody meet in the middle. Because two, sometimes those personalities can clash based on history or wherever they come from. So the inclusion, I think that what makes us just a powerful, and as a leader, you know, I've been doing it for a while for the younger soldiers. It to me, it makes it fun. I love walking up to a soldier, especially in your brand new unit. You know, I told y'all recently, I've been on the job for 60 days. Now I'm at a point where 85%, I'm knowing my soldiers, but I'm still getting to know them. And it's just awesome to say, oh, I didn't know you were from such and such. And then it just creates that dialogue. Hey, first off, where are you from? Where, oh, I'm born and raised in Germany. And then that just, whoa, we have more in common than I thought. So it's an icebreaker for sure. It can create trust, build cohesive teams. That's just like the scratching of the surface. And then one thing leads into another. Going into everything, the SMA said, now you can establish all of that. So.
You're not going to like this, sir, Rainier, but this is going to boomerang right back to you. I think initially diversity is a number, and inclusion means I actually listen to people. So I could have a room full of people, but if I'm not actually paying attention or I don't value your thoughts, doesn't mean anything, right? I mean,
yeah, it's great. We got you at the table, but we don't want you to talk. So, sorry, Rainier, we've had these conversations, you and I. So, I mean, how do you feel about that? Do you feel included in my spot?
Of course.
It's a dangerous question. He goes, no, I hate you, sir.
Since we're going there, I'll pull the curtain back a little bit. Something that people don't know, the inner workings of the Sergeant Major of the Army's office, there's really only about five of us in the office. But of those five, in the past couple of years, we've had single parents. We have AGR soldiers. We have infantry. We have combat engineer, the public affairs. And all of us kind of come from a little bit different backgrounds. We had one woman who, she did not have a close relationship with her parents. And one day she comes in and she had said that her uncle passed away. And I think a natural thing would be like, well, yeah, that's sad, but like, it's your uncle. But if you didn't know her and know about her background, then you wouldn't know that her uncle was really like her dad. Mm-hmm. And so, that takes on a completely different weight. And so I'll say from my experience, just being a part of that, a part of the office, it's been great to model. But like you said, we have a room full of people. And yes, it is a very diverse audience, but we want to be inclusive. So I'll ask somebody from the audience what your experience has been. And if you've seen something.
Is that a deflect there? Sorry.
I think I did a great job answering.
I thought you were going to say, you really do feel included in my office. You got a voice, but it's okay. You ruined it. Thanks.
I mean, I'm moderating the live stream, so I have a big voice right now. I get the microphone. So I'll ask somebody from the audience. So if somebody wants to come on and stand up, I'll hand you this microphone from my hand, and I'm going to stall until somebody stands up, and then I'm going to point at somebody. So right here, your specialist, your airborne wings are shiny. Go on and come on up, because you decided to sit up front. Isn't that how that works?
It does.
So I'd love for you to just kind of talk about what your experience in your squad has been like, kind of how you were welcomed in, like how you kind of got to know your team, and if that was a good experience, or maybe something that you learned, good or bad, from that.
So first, introduce yourself. What you do?
Sorry. Hello. Sorry. I'm Specialist Triana. I'm from 373 Bravo Troop, 1st Brigade. When I first got here, I believe I was pretty much well included into the troop itself. First team leader, who is actually not in the Army anymore, was Sergeant Grosso. Yeah, Sergeant Grosso welcomed me in, gave me a little bit of disciplinary training, but as such, I'm sure everybody will relate. But he welcomed me in with all open arms, obviously. I was pretty much raised Army standard by a Specialist Seymour, who is now currently a team leader on to be a sergeant. Really good guy. And I think one thing that I can reflect on was when we had a team live fire, he conducted the squad so good that our commander, Captain Christian Sloan, was looking at both me and the rest of my squad and said, How did you get them trained so well? How is their cohesion so well that it looks like the same person is moving on both sides as you bound up through Team Live Fires? And the way Specialist Seymour at the time answered was, well, I don't really spend a lot of time with them training as I should, but they are so cohesive outside of a professional business. Like, we all live in the barracks and you can always just go knock on someone's door and get to know them, just as it is in work, where how First Sergeant Simmons brought up, it's more of than a, hey, all the way, how are you doing? It's more of a, oh, hey, you know, where are you from and where are you born and raised? Where, what base did you build off of, pretty much? So I think that's pretty much how we broke the ice. And my squad ended up being one of the best squads that our first sergeant and both our captain had seen in a very long time. And yeah, that's pretty much it, Soren.
Yeah, thank you. Staff Sergeant Pat, as you kind of hear that story about the impacts that cohesion can have on readiness and lethality, what's kind of been your experience and how are you doing that with the soldiers around you?
I think First Sergeant Simmonson and Specialist Chiang definitely put up a good point. So being a leader, being an NCO, isn't just about leading your soldiers. Being able to have the authenticity of conversating with them, the actual caring for that soldier, not just a, hey, how are you, like I mentioned previously, it's that emotional intelligence of actually speaking with that soldier, and if things are going hard with them, understand and be able to adapt of what's going on with them, not just on the surface level, but on the inside. So having that empathy and other characteristics of emotional intelligence, I believe makes you a quality leader in an NCO.
SMA, you're about to wrap up 36 years of service. I'm sure you've spent your entire career just, you know, getting to know your soldiers and having a lot of fun and being just a real nice, caring, understanding leader.
Always.
Always. What's the other side of that coin, though? Kind of how do you balance that with the fact that this is the United States Army? We exist to fight and win the nation's wars to protect America. And, you know, sometimes that's it's dirty business. So how do you balance the two?
Yeah. Like anything is always grounded in a story, right? So I remember this. I was a very young staff sergeant, very young. So I think it might've been 23, maybe, as a staff sergeant. And another soldier specialist and I, we both were dating Germans at the time. We're both in Germany. So we would often go out, knew my first name. And one day, he was up top in the barracks, and I was down. I'm almost certain I was in uniform, and he used my first name. And it was not a pleasant moment. So, and what I told him, you know, very forcefully was that, hey, you know, that's good. You know, when we're doing this, we're going out on dates, it's going to be awkward for you to call me, you know, Staff Sergeant. That's weird. You know, that's not happening. But when this uniform is on, I have a job to do and you got a job to do and you crossed the line, you broke a trust. And this is kind of, you know, I was furious at him at the time. So you broke a trust and, you know, are you willing to put that friendship on the line? Because at work, I may have to tell you to do something that you don't like. That's just my job and you got to respect that. And, believe it or not, he apologized and completely understood what I was saying. So you can have fun. You can enjoy yourself. And I'm not saying, you know, when you see me, you know, anywhere around, I never introduce myself as the Sergeant of the Army. Trust me. It's most of the time not even in uniform. You know, official title or something. But when you meet me, I always just say, hi, this is who I am. It's not the service, 99% of the time. But then people go, okay, we got a service. So, but you got to respect that we can all get together, have fun. And then, and I'm not saying there's a line here or a line there. It's that you got to get to know each other and it's okay to go out and have a good time with each other. But, you know, when you got a job to do, you might be told to do something that could get you killed. You know, if you're in combat and I'm the first sergeant
and we go, hey, I need you to go through that door. And now that's not the time to go, you know, I don't like that, Tony. Okay, I'm like, okay, I appreciate that. So, and on the other side, as a leader, you can't be thinking about this is somebody I know. I know their families. So I've had that in combat. I knew people's families. I knew their kids. But we also had a very dangerous job to do. And it required a lot of discipline. We still had to do it. And they had to respect that those are lawful orders and that we're going to have to execute something really dangerous. But knowing that on a personal level never stopped me from doing my job. And it never stopped them from doing their job, but actually made it better. They trusted that whatever we had said, that we'd done it for the right moment, right time. There's no time to argue. We have to execute this right now. And they trusted me and I trusted them. And I think they did that because we knew each other. I went to every family's house when I was a first sergeant. If they came into my unit, I would say, okay, I never really ask. I'm just going to be honest with you. It's like, hey, welcome to the unit. My wife and I are going to stop by. So I guess there was a question in there, but it's more rhetorical. and we're going to welcome you to the unit. We bring some flowers and we just say, hi, welcome to our unit. So I personally knew people as kids. So when we deployed, I mean, if something bad happened to my soldiers, and it did, I knew that we had to go through that door. I knew fully what that meant. And if something bad happens to my soldiers, I knew that I'd have to call that family that already knew. So there was a lot of trust there. But I think if you took that out, imagine a world where you went to that combat that you didn't feel that the first sergeant had showed up to your house, didn't know your family, and you didn't trust that they, you know, they knew you enough. Do you still want to even go in that door? I just couldn't imagine that as a small unit leader. And that's kind of what that meant to me, is that level of trust, that there is a line and they're blurry and it's not all going to be perfect. I think sometimes the Army will want perfect little lines. You're an NCO, you're a soldier, you sit over there, we sit over here. You're an officer, you're over there, and we're over here. And after 36 years, in all reality, the lines are all over the place. No, they're blurry, they're mixed, they're opposite. I mean, you think officers only have education and enlisted don't. And that's not true. We got master's degree, we got PhDs that are listed. So it's all these lines that we want to create aren't real. We got to make sense of it. It's not going to be perfect. We need to know our people. There's got to be trust, higher to lower. And then we got to execute. And the bottom line is sometimes this is what we do. You know, we're required to fight and win the nation's wars. And I think we're much better at that if we just know our people.
Yes, so Private Shipman, you know, not everybody that comes in the Army maybe has had that experience of, you know, meeting people different from them or, you know, depending on where you come from. You said you're from Arkansas. I'd love to hear your experience joining the Army and maybe something that surprised you about just the people that you met.
Yes, sir. So I enlisted, went through OSA, and arrived here all at 17 years old. So, I mean, that was also kind of a surprise to me, just being the only 17-year-old that was in my troop, probably the whole squadron. So
that kind of the whole post, but it's okay.
That kind of threw me off guard, but it was just coming here. There was, I mean, they'd always crack jokes about just still being like not even being an adult yet, but it was never like a problem of like just falling in to the like puzzle, I guess. Like, so like my roommate, for instance, Specialist Riley, He was a team leader at the time, so he always, like, just helped me just, like, square all my stuff away at the time. So it was never a problem of just, like, finding people or, like, a problem with having, like, trouble to ask questions. It was – they always, like, pretty much pushed me to do that. So they – I'm just like Specialist Triana said, it was just with open arms whenever – as soon as I got here.
Okay, I gotta ask. What surprised you about your first unit? But what didn't surprise you about your first unit? I love asking this question. I do it all the time, but
so
I got to know.
One thing that didn't surprise me was all the way through OSA and airborne school, my drill sergeant told me, like, going to 82nd, it's a big thing. Like, you, they pretty much told me, like, you're going to be above, like, the rest of the Army is what they told me.
That's right.
So, like, just seeing how people carry themselves that day.
I guess you could say that here.
I can say that here. But it didn't surprise me how people carry themselves here. And everybody's just confident with everything they do. And that was one thing that just didn't surprise me. But, again, just being the only, like, I never met another 17-year-old outside of OSIT. That just threw me off. Like, I didn't know it was going to be so obsolete to just join that young.
Okay.
Would you say there was a lot of diversity where you come from? Did you feel like when you came into the Army that you're like, okay, like, yeah, this is kind of what I expected there?
Not really too much diversity, but, like, there's never, like, a problem with, like, accepting people. So, like, whenever I got here, I had a, like, obviously going to OSITs, people from everywhere. So it wasn't really a new thing, but it was really cool just meeting, like, people from Cuba. One of my best friends going through OSIT, and he came here with me, is from Cuba. So he, like, I help him introduce him to our culture, and he, like, tries his best to introduce me to theirs. So it's just, I like the, just everybody coming from everywhere. I like learning new things about everybody. Pretty much
aren't. We'll do Sergeant Cardona. You know, I just did it. I kind of fell into the trap of, you know, using words like diversity as a buzzword. But would you say that is a major focus here? Or do you think that the people who kind of come from all these places, they get assigned to these units, that they're actually focused on those kinds of issues, or more about the work and the mission that you have? What's been your experience?
Personally, in my experience, it's not necessarily diversity. It would be more inclusion. Understanding that each individual does come from a different background, and each individual has a different skill set, different thought process, and understanding that those thought processes make us stronger, right? Different points of views, and again, kind of what Sergeant Major of the Army said, it's okay to be able to listen, right? But you also have to comprehend what they're saying, really understand the meaning or what it is they want and what they want to achieve. And I think the Army has done a really great job in including individuals, however, nothing is perfect. No organization is perfect. There's always going to be more improvement in the progress of inclusion. So as long as the Army continues forward with wanting to include individuals and wanting to actually hear and comprehend what they're saying, then we'll see a good future.
Would you like to push back or provide another perspective?
I'd like you to ask the 19 Delta the same question.
I would love to ask the 19 Delta the same question. Do you think that that we hear these buzzwords like diversity and inclusion, do you think those are actually areas of focus, or do you think that those are things that just kind of happen and really the focus is more on that mission?
No, I definitely agree to what Sergeant was saying. I do feel that they have been doing a great job as far as like the big Army and our unit alone of including people. It's hard to say that it's diverse because I don't feel like a lot of people are left out, and I personally felt included, and I still do, especially being one of the few females in my unit. It's very rare, and with being like one female in my platoon, I did feel very welcomed and very appreciated, and I still do. So
I think the question, not that I'm the moderator, but I am the Sergeant Major Army, and I want to rephrase it. So what's your main focus when you wake up? When you go to work, what is it?
My main focus is to inspire my soldiers around me and be great.
At what?
Our job. I want to be the best at what we do.
Which is?
A scout.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think the first sergeant would be the same question. When you wake up every day, what is your number one focus? Is it, man, I just want to be more inclusive today? Or is it, this is my mission?
I was going to caveat, Sergeant Major. The answers are great. I see where they're getting at, but from a senior leader perspective, and I have these conversations with a plethora of people, peers, seniors, and subordinates. At the end of the day, it is mission focused. We shouldn't just wake up and like, all right, let's talk about inclusion. How about we talk about the mission? Like, how about we talk about X, Y, and Z? And there is a time and place. And like she said, the Army is gearing towards, you know, X, Y, and Z. But the mission is a focus, just the day focus. All right, we have PT, et cetera, on a small scale of things. So my mission SMA is more focus driven. If something happens in that realm that needs to be addressed, because we will always have issues as a military, 100%, it needs to be addressed. You know, we do things like mentorship groups and female mentorship groups, et cetera, to address these things. You know, you can go as far as EO and SHARP and the programs. But ultimately, you know, I am a firm believer, if you come to work and you just want to hustle and grind at your job, like you said, SMA, just be the SME, I think that'll just shatter a lot of problems that we have as a military. Show up, forget about your female, forget about your this and your that. Just try to be the best scout, 14 Tango, you know, field, like just try to be the best you can be at that realm. And I think that'll shatter a lot of issues.
I think we go back to the scout. What are your thoughts? You're shaking your head.
Oh, no, I agree. Well, I don't disagree, first of all. I agree.
You know, it's okay to disagree.
It is okay.
I do it all the time.
Yeah, I do too. No, being great is what I focus on. I think people do it in a different way. And I think a lot of people don't see that. Like, not everyone is going to be great at the same thing. And sharing that experience and expertise and what you're great at with everyone around you, then that's how you make everyone be the best they can be.
Okay. So, Pat, same question.
What's your number one focus when you wake up in the morning?
Honestly, my number one focus is to make sure, you know, I'm at the right place, right time, right uniform, right? But
spoken, you know, like a true soldier.
Realistically speaking, I think a big, huge topic, especially in the unit I work at, is sustainment command, sustainment unit. So I'm always about enhancing the unit's readiness, either being mission dependent, skill task level 10, plan F, range, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the Army as a whole, especially when it comes to supporting jobs, supporting MOS, they kind of lack the lethality of qualifying with your designated carbine, M249 SAW, 240, stuff like that. I think what it has to do as well is going over the basic PMIs, the instructions on how to actually utilize that weapon system and perform and qualify. So my background, I was in infantry for 10 years. And what I can do to enhance the quality of my unit itself is to be able to exercise that skills and experience to better future or better enhance the unit's future.
Esme, I'd love for you to talk about maybe some of the things the Army has done in the last couple of years that really gets after what Sergeant Pat's talking about.
Yeah, we've worked on lethality since I've been in the Sergeant Major Army, probably since I've been in the Army for 36 years. You know, I just want to be very clear. We try to make ourselves more lethal, more ready every day. And that's the number one mission. The number one mission in the Army is fight and win the nation's wars. I already said that. But specifically in the last 4 years, I really thought that we didn't get expertise in our basic soldier task, and that was everybody. And that's why I was really harping on every soldier has an opportunity to go out and do the expert soldier badge. We had that for our infantry units. We had it for our medical units. We had the expert field medical badge. But I said I wanted to enhance the abilities of every MOS to know their basic skills task. So we created the expert soldier badge that was official, I think, right there in AUSA in 2019. So we got that established that you could do that. And my hope was that each organization in the Army has a time, and it doesn't matter your MOS, if you go back and pull back those skills that you need, the skills being, you know, do I understand how to apply a tourniquet? Do I know how to reduce, load, fire, and clear a 240 Bravo? Do I know how to employ the weapons? Because here's what I found. In combat, in 5 years of combat, that those skills, everybody needs it. I need you to know your job. You need to be an expert logistician. You need to be an expert 42 Alpha. You need to be an expert 14 Tango. But you also have to not forget that you're an expert soldier. And by having an expert soldier badge, I wanted everybody to motivate everyone in the Army to not forget about those skills, because that's something you can't make up. I got really bad news for you. If you're in a combat logistics patrol resupplying an organization in Baghdad, and you had to drive those trucks from Kuwait all the way up to Baghdad, and you get shot at, that's not the time to figure out how to fire the 240. And most people would say, well, that's what those infantry folks do. The enemy doesn't know. They don't care. I'm pretty sure in your uniform it says U.S. Army, and they want to kill you. And if you don't shoot back, they're more than happy than killing. So that's the focus of the expert soldier badge, was to incentivize everybody in the Army to don't forget about those basic skills. Know your job, but that's still your job. Your basic job is as a soldier. So we created the expert soldier badge. We actually combined them all now. It's an E3B, so you can do it all together. We're bringing back a little bit of land nav. We're making land nav with a map and a compass. We're also going to go back to the field in our basic leader corps. We've gotten a new rifle, and most people haven't seen that yet. So that's a really cool rifle. You get a chance to shoot it. I mean, it's really neat. 500-meter shot, and my eyes aren't as good as they used to be, and I hit the target pretty easily. So we focus not just on the skills that you do in your unit, expert soldier badge, what can we change in PME, and we're backing it up with systems. That's why I talked about all three of those, the weapon, school, and what you can do at your unit to make yourself a more lethal soldier. It builds a cohesive team. Imagine, first sergeant, she's down there, and you do your expert soldier badge with your unit, and they're all, like, wow, that's not our normal day job, is make sure you're really good at your air defender job, but imagine you could do those other things. The comments we got back on expert badge when we ran it the first time was, a soldier said, I've been deployed. If I would have done this before I deployed, I would have felt a lot better when I came off the plane. And that's what convinced me we had. So we focused in on those three areas, training, PME, and what we're doing in individual units on lethality for 4 years.
Yeah, and seeing those tests combined together, now units don't have the excuse of, well, I have to pick expert infantry or expert soldier or expert field medic badge. What's your vision for the future of the NCO Corps, specifically when it relates to establishing that expertise early on in their career?
Yeah. My vision is 5 years from now, when you set this panel, and every soldier up here will have an expert badge. And every sergeant major, if you want to be a sergeant major in the United States Army, you'll have an expert badge. I mean, how do you demonstrate? Remember, I said number one thing I'd give all advice for staff sergeants was know your job. Job number one is be a good soldier. So that's how you could test that. So I think my vision years from now is that everybody had that opportunity. And then we're going to promote those that actually get that badge. So if you're down as a young soldier, you should strive to get that. You have multiple opportunities. If you don't get it the first time, don't worry about it. Go back. And then go again and go again. And that's why we're really trying to make it easier. But the vision right now for just in that one specific area is you'll look across in this panel, they'll all have an expert badge, and these young soldiers like, I want to be like that person right there. So it'd be the same thing, Ranger tab and an expert soldier badge. I think that will be more common and should be more common in the next 5 or 6 years. That's my vision.
All right, so we'll see you all in 2028. with your expert badges. As we wrap up, we talked about, very briefly in the beginning, the reason, we're kind of having this discussion commemorating that 75th anniversary of the executive order. I want to go back where we started, talking about the triple nickel, the 555th, and when General Gavin brought them into the 82nd, one of the NCOs, Walter Morris, was a member of that first test platoon. I recalled that white soldiers and black soldiers moved into the same barracks, and that was historic. And there was not one incident of racism at the time. And I think that really kind of goes to what we're saying about this idea of cohesion and lethality, and that when everyone, comes together and focuses on their mission, a lot of that other stuff kind of breaks down. As Private Shimon said, he didn't, he he didn't have a Cuban friend before he joined the Army. And, you know, now he's kind of been introduced to that culture and being able to share and have those experiences. So what I think is really unique about this 75th anniversary is that when President Truman signed that executive order, the 82nd really didn't see a change because they had already had some of the desegregation in place already. And I think that's a tribute to the professionalism of the U.S. soldier. Just that, you know, when we align ourselves with a mission, something like this, you know, doesn't have a big effect, that we can trust each other and that we, you know, we all come together to accomplish that mission, which is to fight and win the nation's wars. So as we wrap up SMA, I'd love to give you the last word. But first, anybody else on the panel have anything that's just kind of been burning in your heart that you want to say?
Okay, we're going to challenge the private has to say something before I close. If there's one thing that you would like to see us fix about the Army, what would be that one thing? And please don't say beards because it's not going to happen. So I'll take that one off, so go next.
Honestly, my experience, Sergeant Major, it's been really good since I've been here. I've been welcomed without any problems. I've been really, walked through pretty much everything I need to do. Like, in the one field problem we had platoon sticks. There was never, them getting, too mad. I mean, they'd get upset if I messed something up, but they kind of understood it was my first field problem here at the unit, so they kind of just talked me through it and helped me through it. And then the next time we saw that in a reactor contact or something, it was just done smoothly the second time. So everything that I've encountered so far has been good and smooth, so I wouldn't really recommend any changes.
Okay, there you go. No changes to the Army, that's all I got. That's me. I just kind of close with you know, especially with what we're talking about with 75 years, and I'll end and with what I actually started with. And you heard it multiple times. Nobody up here wants to be judged by what we look like. We want to be judged by our actions and our accomplishments. And when people try to put us in that position, we push back, to include me. You know, at some point, 3 years ago, a lot of people said, "Sergeant Major, you know, what about this? Are you the first this or first that?" I was like, none of that matters to me. What matters to me is I want to be the best version of me that I can be. I want to be known, you know, did the 16th SMA exactly everything he did possible for the soldiers. That's what I want to be judged on. Nothing else. Not my MOS, where I came from, where I grew up. Not by how weird my hair looks sometimes. Do I get a little darker in the sun? So, or any of that. I just want to be the best version of me that I can be. And that's what we all need to look at. You automatically have prejudices. When you see people, you automatically judge them. I think everybody in the world does it. You need to acknowledge that and go, okay, I acknowledge that. But then judge them. Are their actions what they need to be? Look past your own judgment or prejudice and say, is the actions of this person great or not? And I think when you push through that as every individual in the world and judge people by their actions, we'll be okay. We'll be as great as we need to be. And that's the words of encouragement I give you all. We have great people in here that are extremely focused on what they do and their mission. And they're going to, you all will continue to do that. But you got to get through your own blinders, maybe even acknowledge that you have some swings in your gap. But then at the end of that, you look across and say, is this person, and I've done this several times, put them in two categories. Are they helpful or they're not helpful? You know, they're not helpful. I just go, whoop. okay, you're not helpful. I appreciate it. Go stand in the corner, look at chalkboard. Everyone else, they're helpful. Let's talk to these folks. So, in other words, judge people on their actions and hold them accountable. If they're not meeting their expectations, doesn't matter who they are, fix it. You know, hey, that's not right. You know, and don't be afraid to do that. Doesn't matter. Well, this, you know, when we're putting women in infantry, this one soldier goes, "Hey, you know, only women can protect women in my unit. I was like, oh, that's insane. That didn't make any sense. So we got to push back that. We got to be great. And that's what I know that you're going to do. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Some might say we have to be all that you can be. We'll close on that. Thank you so much, Sergeant Najami. Thanks to our panelists, and thanks for joining us live on Divids, on social media, and on the ForceCom Frontline podcast.
That's it for this episode. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can also find full video episodes of our podcast on YouTube. You can just search for the ForceCom Frontline, and we'll see you next time on the Frontline.